Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. And this evening, our guest is a gentleman I've known probably, well, I first met him probably 20 years ago, 1988, when I was running for Congress in the 16th Congressional District. In fact, I ended up to be the Republican candidate, challenging the sitting incumbent Democrat. But Bob Plimpton has been around, involved in politics for a long period of time. And then, of course, in more recent years, he's written a book, and he's had some ideas. I'm not even sure that I agree with him, but I wanted to talk to Bob and find out what he feels and, of course, what he's doing. It's been a long time since we had any time to talk. How are you, Bob?
Just doing great, Dr. Stan.
All right, and, of course, Bob.
I just got through listening to an archive of your show. I think it was last night or something, but I don't see that we disagree on anything.
All right. All right, fine. Well, anyway, I'm really looking forward to hearing what Bob has to say. Why don't you tell me what you're doing? I understand you've authored a book since we last met, and certainly you're trying to get people to understand that they're taking our freedom away. So you just go ahead, and I'll interrupt you from time to time for the breaks, but tell us what you're doing, what your philosophy is, and, of course, why you feel that we're losing our freedom.
Well, it started back in 1982 when the Lord told me to get involved in the governmental process. And I've been going at it ever since, some 25 or 6 or 7 years. And the more I got into it, I started saying, why does this happen? Why does that happen? What happens over here? Why does this work this way? Well, I just got researching. I spent days in law libraries, which I don't have to do anymore with a computer. You can get done in 10 minutes where it used to take a day. But the Lord led me to get into a broad range of subjects. A great many people, well, they go after the IRS and they know all this about the IRS, but they don't know anything about the court system, so when the IRS comes against them, they wind up with free food and housing for a considerable period of time. And the IRS came against me for 3 years in a row with 3 different grand juries, and they'd never even got an indictment. But because of what I knew about the way the courts work. So I was fortunate in that. And we just went down the line how they are taking the substance of the American people, just sucking the substance out of the American people through, let's say, traffic tickets. That's just a money-raising racket. As a matter of fact, one of your cities in California the other day came out and said, we haven't got enough revenue. Well, we want you guys to go out and write more tickets. So proving that it's a money-making scheme and nothing to do with safety, well, we figured out how to get people out of traffic tickets. I went out and got myself, I went speeding down through a little town here and got myself arrested. And got no driver's license, no insurance, no registration for the car. I said, I don't need it. They said, yes, you do.
Hold that thought, Bob. We'll be back in just a moment here with Bob Plimpton, an old friend, and we want to hear what he's been doing the last 20 years. Well, Bob, you were just saying you told the officer, arresting officer, that you didn't need insurance, you didn't need a driver's license. So what happened?
Well, he gave me tickets anyway. I think I wound up with four or five tickets. And I put in the various paperwork into court that I have in my traffic tickets forms kit. And sure enough, I went to the hearing, and the officer didn't show up because they told him, don't go near that place. And so all the tickets were dismissed.
Bob, how were you able to avoid this? Certainly, you were driving without a driver's license. You were driving without insurance. And did you speed or do anything else? Or was it simply, how did you manage to get yourself arrested?
Well, he said it was speeding. Later, he dismissed the speeding, which was his only probable cause. But anyway, the other tickets he had there, but he never showed up at the hearing. He showed up the day before. When he dismissed the speeding ticket, and then the other four tickets for no license, no registration, no insurance were dismissed because of the paperwork that I put in, and that's the way it's been working for people.
I think you need to tell us a little bit about the paperwork. How can you have paperwork that's going to get you out of a speeding ticket?
Sure. You go in with a motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction, and there is a memorandum of law in support of that motion. Well, this memorandum of law, I think, is like 18, 19 pages long, and it absolutely proves that there is no need for a driver's license or registration or anything. You see, what happens is when a vehicle it comes over from Japan or out of Detroit, whatever, when it comes to the dealer, it comes with the MCO. Do you know what an MCO is?
No, I don't. So you're going to have to just tell us all these simple things, Bob.
Right. Okay. The Lord told me this. I bought a double wide, and I was building a 200-acre Christian retreat up in the Great Smoky Mountains in North Carolina, and I bought a double wide for the ranch manager's dwelling. And as I was signing papers for the agreeing to buy it, the Lord said, you get the MCO. I never heard of an MCO, but he said it, so I told the fellow,
Hold that thought, Bob. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Bob Plimpton. And Bob was telling basically how he has put together a kit that you can utilize, of course, if you are stopped for a speeding violation. Of course, he was not speeding. I don't know why the policeman stopped him. But anyway, the policeman actually dropped the ticket for speeding, but I cited him for driving without a license, for not having insurance, and other things that are required in the state of Florida where he resides. So basically then it was beginning to tell us about the information surrounding an MCO. Now, I don't know what an MCO is, and apparently Bob didn't know what an MCO was until he began to look into this. He said that he was actually was developing a 200-acre Christian camp for some... was this for children or was this for adults in North Carolina?
It was for both.
Fine.
Actually, Young Life used it for their headquarters for 2 years for their Appalachian Extreme program, but it was mostly high schoolers and junior high.
All right, fine.
But anyway.
So, you were going to sign for this double-wide trailer home that you were getting for the people working there, and then you say that the Lord told you to get the MCO, and you didn't know what an MCO was, so what is an MCO?
Okay, well, I rushed right out, and I found the MCO was a manufacturer's certificate of origin. That's the birth certificate of the car. It's the title of the car.
All right.
Now, the dealer, I went to the closing. I went to the closing. Now I knew what an MCO was.
You went to a closing.
The Lord told me, I get it.
Now, you went
so
to
I got to the... I got to the closing.
You're closing for what?
And I said, now, remember, I get the MCO. He says, no, the MCO goes to the DMV. I said, no. When I agreed to buy this, I said, I get the MCO, and you said, okay. Well, he said, it goes to the DMV. I said, show me the regulations. So he showed me the regulations, and I took my wife to lunch, and I flipped the regulations open, and there it is, Section 20 of the North Carolina, whatever it is. It says the original purchaser from a dealer gets the manufacturer's certificate of origin, unless it's being financed. Then the MCO goes to the DMV, and the state holds that car as a third-party holder against the whatever it is, mortgage against it or loan against it, whatever. And so I took it back to him, and I said, read this. Well, he read it, and he said, I never heard of such a thing. I said, well, how many people, you have to pay cash for it. You can't have it financed, because then the MCO does go to the DMV. So I said, well, how many of you people pay cash? He said, about a third. I said, well, they should all be getting the MCO. He said, I never heard of such a thing, but I got to call the president of Fleetwood Homes, the manufacturer of the double wide. So he called the president. The president said, no, that goes to the DMV. He says, let me fax you something. So he faxed over the regs. He called him. He said, you get it? Yep. You read it? Yep. What does it say? And it says he gets the MCO. Well, do I give it to him? Well, he said, let me call the head of the DMV. This is in Raleigh. He's calling the head of the DMV, and he said, no, we get the MCO. He said, would you look at Section 20 of the regs? And he said, I could hear. I talked to him later. He said, I could hear the flipping of the pages. I said, what does it say? It says he gets the MCO. Well, do I give it to him? He said, well, I guess so.
All right, so this is the manufacturer's certificate of origin.
I got the MCO. Now, what does that mean? That means I own that vehicle. The state doesn't own it, because when the MCO is turned over to the state, the vehicle is donated to the state, believe it or not, because of a thing that the attorneys snuck in on us called reification. Reif. When I used to give seminars, I'd give $100 and anybody could tell me the definition of R-E-I-F, RIF, and nobody could ever tell me. Well, you look it up in Black's Dictionary, it's a robbery, all right? Reification is basic to transfer of titles in the United States of America. What is reification? It's the art of robbery. The art of robbery. Okay, so when your dealer sends your plates to the DMV to get your, sends the MCO up there to get the certificate of title and the registration plates, two things happen. Number one, the state now owns the vehicle, because in reification, the document of title contains whatever it is. The birth certificate contains the child.
Well, now let's imagine. Of course, we have a pink slip. Is this a MCO? Is a pink slip on a car an MCO?
No. The MCO it just says right on manufacturer certificate of origin.
All right. So basically, if you're getting a car, you'd certainly want to get the certificate of origin of that car. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you send that to the DMV, and you're donating that vehicle, you're surrendering that vehicle to the DMV.
All right.
Okay, now the state owns the car. You don't own it anymore, but they send back a certificate of title to you, right? And that certificate of title means that there's a title somewhere. You don't have it, but we've got it, but there's a certificate of title. And you have the beneficial use of that vehicle, that state-owned vehicle, except that you've got to follow their rules. Now, their rules are You've got to have a driver's license to drive it because they don't want just anybody driving their vehicle. They want a state authorized driver to drive their vehicle. And you've got to insure it because they don't want to be responsible for it, so they make you insure it. And you've got to get a registration plate for it because they want to know where it is at all times. They want to be able to track it. And you've got to pay an annual tax on it. Now, the annual tax is not tax, it's rent for the beneficial use of the state's vehicle for that year. And now, you have to adhere to those once that state gets a hold of that MCO. Now, as long as you have the MCO, none of those apply. It's your vehicle. You don't need a driver's license to drive it. You don't need insurance. They can't make you, they can't make anybody take out insurance, for their own property, only for the state property. Yeah, they can do that.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, now you were then able, when you were arrested for, or at least when you were cited for driving without a license, did you have plates on your car? Did you have license plates?
I had the dealer vanity plates.
Okay, I had dealer's vanity plates on the car. You had no insurance. And now, basically, of course, then you were able, actually, when you got into court, to prove that they had no right to cite you for it because you had the MCO. Was this how the basis of your lawsuit?
No, that won't fly.
All right.
The only thing that flies in there, there's several things. Incidentally, the man that arrested me, I wound up with a $756,000 lien against him. Tied him up. He can't use his credit cards. He can't borrow money. He can't get a mortgage. He can't refi or anything. He's tied up financially the rest of his life.
Well, no, it really is not fair. He's just doing his job. I mean,
yeah,
after all,
I told him at the time, I said, you don't want to arrest me. You're the handcuffs. He handcuffed me. I wasn't even trying to escape or anything, and that's the only reason I was supposed to be in handcuffs you. So, anyway, what it wound up to, the thing that flies in court is you send a private communication to the arresting officer. That starts the thing. Then you put a motion into the court, a motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction. Right? And now there's a memorandum of laws about 18 pages long that proves that you don't need a driver's license or you don't need registration, you don't need insurance. So there is no jurisdiction. Now, when the court sees that, they say, we better let this guy go. So they figure out some way of dismissing that case. Which in my case, they told the fellow, don't show up at the hearing.
This was the officer who arrested you.
He didn't show up, so they dismissed all of it.
Oh, I know. Does this work for other people, or is it just this one instance? Will it work in every state?
Oh, yeah. It works anywhere. It works anywhere because for a traffic ticket, they never saw this kind of paperwork go in. And they look at it, and they say, shoot, this guy knows. They love to eat tuna, but they're afraid of sharks. This guy's obviously a shark. We don't want to mess with him. And, it's happened. Many people have bought my traffic ticket forms kit and gotten out of their whatever it is they're charged with.
But, of course, the thing is that they have to have the MCO for their car as well, don't they?
No, they really don't. That's not the issue. The issue is the law. The issue is the law. Your remedy is in the law. And when you put in that it's a tremendous thing, Stan. It's the motion to dismiss and then the memorandum of law in support of the motion to dismiss is a killer. I mean, any judge looks at that and says, we're dead.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Bob Plimpton an interesting approach to certainly dealing with the judicial system. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest is Bob Plimpton. Bob certainly is talking about how the legal system many times is certainly used to advance the purposes of the people in government. And many times, certainly officers, police officers, are told they have to write a certain number of tickets, because they want to use this in many instances. Collect money. And certainly there can be abuse of the system. Now, Bob, do you think that somebody who's actually speeding and endangering other people's lives should be issued a ticket? Do you think that this is a deterrent to people to speed and do other things that might be dangerous?
Well, you're talking about prior restraint. If I'm going 100 miles an hour down the highway and there's no traffic there, I'm not doing any damage at all. And let's say it's 45, as it is around here, it's 45 on four-lane US 1. Well, I mean, you could go down there 60 miles an hour. As long as you don't hurt anybody, there's no crime committed unless you create personal injury or property damage. Then you're under crime. But anybody going along the road, 10, 15 miles above the speed limit, 20 miles above, it depends on the traffic. Actually, a judge told me one time that the speed limit is the speed limit or the flow of traffic. If the speed limit's 55 and everybody's going 75 or 80, the flow of traffic, don't bother it, keep it going. There's a lot of phony baloney that goes on with the court system. Another thing to do is go into court and ask them for their commercial indemnity bond. I must see your commercial indemnity bond before we proceed any further. And he'll either, we've had him walk off the bench, just leave. Or they'll say, well, no, you don't. Yes, sir, I do, because if you can't show me your commercial indemnity bond, there's no claim in this case. There is no claim, and without a claim, it must be dismissed. And they, they'll back right down and they'll dismiss the case.
Now, what is a commercial indemnity bond?
Well, it's a commercial indemnity bond is what they have to have, a judge or a prosecutor. They have to have a commercial indemnity bond in order to hold office.
All right.
And if they can't show you that bond, you don't even know if they're a judge. You don't even know if they have the authority to be doing what they're doing.
I see.
In many cases, Dr. Sand, they have not the authority.
Okay, fine. And so you basically ask the judge to see his commercial indemnity bond. Do all of them have a commercial indemnity bond?
Well, they're supposed to. If they're sitting there and drawing the salary, they're supposed to have a commercial indemnity bond.
All right.
Now, there's another tax feature, and that is to go in and ask for the 1099 on the case. I want to see the 1099 on this case. Well, 1099 is, believe it or not, when you are arrested. Oh boy, have you ever seen Gene Keating's dissertation?
Hold that thought right there. We're going to be back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bob Plimpton, and Bob is simply saying that when he has gone into court, he asked the judge to see his commercial indemnity bond. Of course, apparently every judge who is legitimate has to have a commercial indemnity bond, and if he doesn't have it, then of course he has no right to try the case. Now, these are legal technicalities that would be known to somebody who studied this like Bob has, and right now we've got Jeannie calling from Santa Cruz. I will ask for no other calls, but as long as we've got Jeannie on the line. Jeannie, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, this man is exactly right. He knows the law, and I just beat a speeding ticket about 2 weeks ago in Watsonville in Santa Cruz County. And I didn't want to get arrested and had the handcuffs on me, so I went within the court system, meaning I did sign the ticket, but they got me. It was a radar cop on a motorcycle on Airport Boulevard, and he got me at 45 in a 35-mile-per-hour zone. And what you do in the court system, if you don't want to do what happens, is you don't fight what they caught you at 45. You go to the California Safe Speed, and every city under the Public Works Department has the basic safe speed for every road in that city. The
right.
safe speed that I got clocked at for 45 miles per hour was 42.8. And when you go into traffic court, the judge has the list of all the safe speeds on every county road in front of him. And so what happened, he knew me, he knows my name, and he knew who mentored me, which was Richard Quigley. The officer did not show up because he understood I had done my homework and I had the Public Works safe speed paper.
All right, fine. Anything else, Jeannie?
No, but that's one way of going about it. But this gentleman is exactly right. It takes a lot of energy if you're willing to be handcuffed. But I didn't want to be handcuffed, so I just worked within the system.
Okay, God bless, Jeannie. Thanks for calling.
Good job.
Okay, go right ahead, Bob.
Okay.
Have you heard that approach that Jeannie used as far as the safe speed on specific roads?
Yes. The posted speed limit can be challenged. And that's one way to do it, but that's a little nebulous as far as I'm concerned. The posted speed limit is it's supposed to be radar verified. Radar verified. I don't know how they radar verify a speed limit, but they do it. And if it hasn't, and usually it's supposed to be done every 2 years, and usually they don't. But I never get into all that kind of thing because we cut the feet out from under them, pull the rug out from under them in the court. Another way of doing it is to go in and ask for the 1099.
The papers that are written up when you're cited by the officer, is that right? That's a 1099?
No, a 1099 is a IRS form, a 1099, OID, and it, Gene Keating has a very well-researched dissertation or kind of packet on prisoners and their bonds. Now, when you were arrested, when anyone is arrested, the court writes, they don't tell you about it, but they write a bid bond. Now, how much is a bid bond? You don't know. They won't tell you. You come for arraignment, the hearing, they'll write an arraignment bond for that. And if you're ever convicted, then they write a conviction bond. Now, the only reason you go to jail, no matter what you have done, the only reason you go to jail is for contempt of court for not paying off those bonds. Now, and those bonds will show up on a 1099, and that's why you ask for the 1099, and if there's no 1099, there's no case, because without a 1099, there's no claim. If they won't show you the 1099, and if they do, you take along with you a promissory note made out to them, but in blank. And if they show you the 1099, you just fill out the amount on the promissory note, hand it in, and you're gone, no matter what you've done.
All right, hold on. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bob Lipton. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bob Plimpton. Go right ahead, Bob. Now, you're saying that if they don't have the 1099, do they always have the 1099? Do they ever have the 1099?
It's always there. It's always there, but they won't. So they're just very reluctant to show you because you're not supposed to know about it. And that's why, now, that's why these, we have the most prisoners incarcerated in this country per capita than any country anywhere, including Russia, Poland, wherever.
And I think it's really important. I think that's a very good point. The American people have to understand we have 2.3 million people in prison in the United States. Communist China, with four times our number of population, has about 1.5 million. In America, we have 7 million people on prison, probation, or parole. And certainly, this really suggests we're moving towards a police state. But nobody ever uses these figures to tell the American people what's happening. We were supposed to be the freest country in the world, but are we really? You go right ahead, Bob.
Okay. The basic reason for it, Stan, is that they're running these bonds, all right? Now, if you don't get the 1099 and pay off those bonds, you're going to jail for contempt of court for not paying off those bonds. That's the only reason anybody, no matter what they've done, goes to jail. Now, why do you go to jail? You go to jail and they hold you as collateral against those bonds that they have written. They take those bonds, and you were talking last night or recently about the derivatives. Those bonds become derivatives, a part of a package maybe of $2 trillion or $10 billion derivative package that gets sold all over the world. And I went in and looked at a case that I had a long time ago, and they're still trading it. Who was trading it? I've forgotten who was. Well, one of the big houses was trading the bonds on my traffic case years ago. So, you know, it's just a big racket. And so these people in prison today, jails or prison or whatever you want to call it, they're being held as collateral against those bonds. And that's it. That's it. That's why we have so many in prison. And what do they do with all these bonds?
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, fine. This is Dr. Stan. Bob is telling us about the 1099 forms that are filled out when, of course, somebody is charged. And I've never heard this sort of thing. But, Bob, what happens if somebody's guilty of murder? Certainly they should be in prison or executed, but certainly in many states they have life imprisonment. So why in heaven's name would anybody write out a 1099 on somebody who's been convicted of a murder and is going to prison for the rest of their life?
To make money.
But how are they going
to
make money?
To pay for the Iraq war and build airports and bridges.
Bob, from a logical point of view, I mean, you go to prison for, you've committed a murder. They've got to provide, food and lodging and health care and everything else for you for the rest of your life. How could you possibly incorporate that into some sort of a bond, as you say?
Well, they write a bond. There's three bonds, and there's a 23, a 24, and a 25. And the 23 is the first one written when you're arrested. The 24 is the bond that's written when you have an arraignment. And the 25 comes into play when you are convicted. Now, there's a whole bunch of ways. I've got a book that's out called How to Control the Courtroom in Criminal Trials. And it's easy to do once you know the rules of the game. But anyway, they write the bonds on these people. No matter what they've done, doesn't make any difference what they've done, whether they spit on the sidewalk or murder somebody. They write the bonds. Now, the bonds, as I say, they become part of a derivative package that's sold everywhere. It's all over the place.
But, Bob, and how can they make any value out of somebody they're going to send to prison for murder?
Well, how do you know how much bonds they put on? They may have $10 million worth of bonds riding on that one case.
Why would that bond be of any value to anybody? Who's going to make payments on the bond? I mean, after all, you sell a bond. Why, of course, when you buy a bond, you expect to get regular payments on that. So how would somebody going to prison generate regular payments to the people who bought the bond?
No, the payments come from the interest off the derivative. That's why you were talking about derivatives there. That's why the derivatives are so dangerous, because there's really nothing behind them. Largely nothing behind them. I mean, that's why all these subprime mortgages that were into derivative cases, or whether they were or not, that's why all those derivatives have gone down the drain. That's why Bear Stearns gotten the tail end crack.
But
a whole lot of others, as you mentioned the other night, a whole lot of others have their tails in the crack, and it's going to get a lot worse.
Well, I think you're absolutely right on that, but certainly the bonds are originally issued, mortgages. They're mortgages on homes that have intrinsic value, and the people, of course, who have taken out the mortgage are expected to pay so much a month, and, of course, if they do not do that, then, of course, and there are enough people who are in this bundled group of mortgages, which we now call a bond, so then they get into real problems. And so the derivative is the insurance policy that's issued by some derivative company that, if the people who should be paying their mortgages don't do it, then they'll have to make up the difference. But you're going to have to explain to me, because I'm a little dense, how this has anything to do with somebody going to prison, for a murder. They've committed a murder. They're going to be in prison. They're going to be, costing the state money for their food and health and lodging and guards. How does that in any way create something of intrinsic value that would justify the issuing of a bond? I mean,
the amount that they spend to warehouse the collateral, you see, the collateral is there because we have intrinsic value. Our labor and our thinking and our contribution to society, it has value. That's substance. You can trade that for a loaf of bread. You can trade it for a bushel of wheat, whatever. You work so much time for it. So we have substance. Gold has substance. Silver has substance. Other commodities have substance. Like you can trade a quart of milk for a loaf of bread or whatever, but it's got to be substance. Now, we're dealing in a world, in an Alice in Wonder world,
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, Alice in Wonderland. And that's the kind of world we're dwelling in. It doesn't make sense. It absolutely doesn't make sense. It costs, the government pays $4,800 a month to warehouse you in Hoosgow. But they're getting much more than that off of these bonds, because these bonds are like, so they got $10 million of income. Well, they can invest that income in any way they want and get the interest off it. It doesn't make sense. The whole foolish thing doesn't make sense. It had to be demonic. No man could have thought up the craziness that is involved in the bonding of prisoners.
All right.
Or many of these other things that go on. And another thing is, of course, we I know most of your people, I'm sure you do, that we went bankrupt on April 9th, 1933, Roosevelt declared the United States bankrupt as a corporation, and they took all the gold, and they pledged ourselves. We became chattel against the bankruptcy of the United States, which is, and was still in reorganization of that bankruptcy. And, a month later, they evened out the books on June 5th, 1933, with House Joint Resolution HJR 192, which in effect said, look, we took their gold and we took them, their labor, and they got no way to pay their bills. You can't pay a bill with debt. You can only discharge it, and that's where they gave us the privilege of discharging our debt. And that to discharge our debt, well, there's got to be something there. So they created a prepaid exemption for us, unlimited exemption for each of us. You are a multimillionaire. I am a multimillionaire. Everybody listening to the sound of our voices here is a multimillionaire. I've known that for 12 years. I've been trying to figure out, okay, so you've got this unlimited fund there. How do you tap into it? Well, you tap into it several different ways. You tap into it every time you put your signature on a financial instrument, like a promissory note or a credit card slip or any commercial instrument. You are creating new money. You're not creating money. There is no money because they took the gold and silver. But you're creating credit. And we're the only ones that can create credit because we're the only ones doing the work. Sears Roebuck doesn't create credit because they don't do any work. They got a lot of people in there that do work, but they don't do work. They're incapable. They're a fiction. The fiction can't do work. But we do work. We've got labor. We've got intelligence. We create new things, new ideas, cell phones, and all this stuff. All right. So we're valuable, and we got credit. So we've got this unlimited credit in there, and we keep playing that against it. Let's say when you sign a promissory note for a mortgage. That promissory note is exactly the same as cash. Title 31 of the United States Code says a promissory note is the same as cash. And it is. It's considered cash. And what does the bank do? The bank, all right, it's, let's say, $100,000 mortgage you're getting. All right, and you put up $20,000 already. And with that $120,000 goes into the bank as a loan. And actually, they open an account in your name called a transaction account. Now, that has $120,000 in it. Where'd that come from? That came from you. $20,000 came out of your pocket, and $100,000 was created as new credit with your promissory note. All right? Now, the bank pays the seller the $120,000 for the property out of your savings account or whatever. It's a transaction account, they call it. All right. The bank is at risk for nothing. They didn't loan you any money. You thought you borrowed money from the bank. Banks don't loan money for anything. Every bank loan is a fraud because they get you thinking they're loaning you money, which they're not doing, and they get you repaying it with interest on money that they didn't even have or they're not at risk for in any way. So that's the way that we go in and get mortgages dismissed because you do it with a promissory note. you start it with a promissory note, and now you're going in and they say, well, you owe us this money. Well, you really don't. There are other ways of getting out of a mortgage, but the easiest way to get out of a mortgage is give them another promissory note. Here, take it. But this time, Mr. Bank, I'm going to report it on a 1099 OID, IRS form 1099 OID, and I'm going to put in a 1040V form, and now it becomes an IRS tax matter. All right? Now it's no longer a mortgage. It's an IRS tax matter, and I'm going to turn this 1099 OID, I'm going to send that to the IRS in Austin, Texas, and that's going to, if you don't report this transaction, it's going to make you a tax delinquent. And the tax delinquent, you let the IRS deal with them if they don't report it. And they report it. And they zero out your account and send you back your full reconveyance, a deed of full reconveyance on the property. And you own your property free and clear, which is only fair because you bought it in the first place. You bought it with your promissory note.
But, of course, you did not pay for it.
Excuse me?
You did not pay for it. You signed a note to pay for it. You didn't pay for it. You got $20,000 in the $120,000 home, and so you're essentially, what you're suggesting is that you get the property for nothing.
No, you don't get it for nothing. You loaned the bank $120,000, which bought the house.
All right.
That bought the property right there.
Right.
And they know that. They know that they have no real right to do it. But they it's a con game, just like the Federal Reserve notes are a con game. They're not worth anything, but you take them because you take them from me, or I take them from you for one of my books or something, and because I know I can take it down to the grocers, and the grocer will not understand me, he'll give me food for it. But it's just a con game.
Well, I think, of course, the people have to understand that banks create money out of nothing. It really is, as Bob says.
Right.
It is a con game.
Right.
Of course, I don't necessarily know that I have the time to do what Bob is doing. But before we go on, Bob, I would like you to get out your website, if you have one, and tell people how to get copies of your book.
Okay. They can get a free copy of my book. It took me 20 years of research to write it. Actually, the Holy Spirit wrote it, to tell you the truth. I was a typist, so he gave me all this information, and you see it in the book. The book is free on www.bobplimpton.com. That's B-O-B, P as in Paul, L-I, M as in Mary, P as in Paul, P-O-N, Plimpton. Bobplimpton.com. A blue bar will come up. Click on the blue bar, and you can download a free copy of the book that took me 20 years to research and write. And it's an easy 2-hour read, but it's one of the most educational pieces you'll ever come across.
All right, fine. For the people who don't have access to a computer, do you sell copies, or can they buy copies of the book from you?
I'm sorry, they cannot. I just destroyed 3,500 copies of it because I was getting too much problems with it because the address in the book was wrong. And the original paperback copy of the book was, the address was wrong, and we were getting all kinds of trouble with it. And so I said, I'm going to just get rid of the books and just have it on the Internet. But who doesn't have a computer? Not everybody does.
Right, well, I think most people do. Anyway, our guest this evening has been Bob Plimpton, and he's been investigating the law. Where did you learn all of these things, Bob?
I just kept studying, Sam. I just kept studying and studying and studying and researching and researching and staying. And then, of course, let's take lawsuits. Well, I just told you how the Lord told me about the MCO, which I didn't have a clue. All right, so somebody brought a lawsuit against me. I thought it was unfair, but it was. There's a lot of frivolous lawsuits going around. So I said, "What do I do about this, Lord?" And he told me what to do, and I did it, and the lawsuit went away.
Okay, what did you do about a lawsuit? Let's see, how did you handle a lawsuit?
The way I handled it was I put in, you see, the only way that they can, a fiction cannot do business with a man. A court or a bank or anything can't do business with Dr. Stanley Monteith. But they can do business with your name in all capital letters, which is also a fiction. A fiction can do business with a fiction. A real man can do business with a real man, but a real man can't do business with a fiction, or vice versa. So they have to bring a lawsuit in your straw man. It's called a straw man. They invented it, straw man.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. All right, fine. And so basically, they're going to send you a subpoena. They're going to send you some sort of a statement saying we're going to sue you. And
right. And the name on it is your straw man. It's your name, but it's in all capital letters. It has to be, because they cannot come against you. They can only come against your straw man, which is also a fiction. It looks like you. It sounds like you. But it's not you.
And in other words, when they send you the legal notification, it will all be in capital letters?
Absolutely. And you look in your wallet or purse, and you'll find that all the cards in there, insurance card, credit card, whatever's in there, AAA, whatever, is in there. Is your name is in capital letters. That is not you. That is not you. That's your straw man. And you need your straw man do business in commerce, because you could not get a social security number. You could not get a credit card. You could not get an insurance card. You could not get a club card. It has to be all in, it's in commerce, so it has to be in your straw man's name.
And so how do you get out of this if you are actually being charges are brought against you, and they've sent you this in capital letters.
Okay, you send them an affidavit of denial of corporate status. That's what the Lord showed me to do. Send an affidavit of denial of corporate status, and then you send also, along with it, you send a notice of copyright. You're going to copyright your straw man. So they can't use it anymore unless they pay you a copyright fee. Just like you can open a hamburger joint, but you can't call it McDonald's. If you call it McDonald's, they're going to come after you for using their thing, and they're going to charge you a fee. Well, the same way with this. So you put in a affidavit of denial of corporate status, a notice of copyright, copywriting your straw man so nobody else can use it without your permission, and then a hold harmless and indemnity agreement between you and your straw man, making the straw man the debtor and you the creditor or secured party. All right? You submit those documents to the court, to the clerk of court, and you've proven your case.
However, out of time, Bob, but I want to thank you so very much. It's been fascinating. Thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, fine.
All right, fine. Well, our guest this evening has been Bob Plimpton, and certainly we could have talked a great deal longer about the various things he's been doing. And, of course, this is a side of law which most people really don't understand. We're trapped in a system somebody else has created. Most of our courts, if you go into them, you'll notice that they have a flag that has a gold braid on it. That's an admiralty court. It's not a constitutional court. And, of course, they're really not interested in constitutional law. In fact, repeatedly the judges, when you are going to be appearing as a jury or being selected to be a juror will tell you that you are not to look up the law, you're not to look up anything at all, you're simply to do exactly what he says, and he's going to tell you if he wants that person convicted or not. And unfortunately, this is not the way our system works. According to our system, the jury determines the law and the constitutionality of the law. But unfortunately, we are in a system, an administrative system, where the rights of the individual have been certainly abandoned in large part, because it makes it work much more efficiently if you have a ruler, a judge, who's going to tell the jury exactly how they're going to come up with the conclusions. And unfortunately, this very often is what happens, because the judge tells them what the law is, and they are not to look up the law themselves. Bob is telling you a way to deal with this, whether you want to or not. Right now, I've got too much to do to be involved in trying to circumvent what's going on. But I respect Bob. He's an honest man, and there are many people out there who are involved in working in this matter. Bob Plimpton, thanks very much for being with us. Good night. God bless. And of course, this is the time. I certainly want to let you know that our programs are recorded on tape or CD. We do talk during the breaks. And if you'd like to get a copy of what you've just heard, why, give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's, pardon me, 1-800-544-8927. Of course, I really believe that my time has to be put in trying to convince people who are involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men, that there really are secret societies out there. There is a small group of people who are dedicated to the destruction of America, and their loyalty is the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader. And so, certainly, we hope many of you want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that you want to get the talk we've given on the forbidden secret, and it comes with a syllabus, that you'll certainly want to get our latest talk. It's called The Planned Police State, because they really are planning a police state. They're planning to suspend the Constitution and round up American citizens. And if you doubt that, of course, you need to see this, because you'll actually see the Iran-Contra hearings that were held back in 1988, where Congressman Brooks is trying to bring out the fact that there is a plan, in case of a national emergency, to suspend the Constitution, suspend habeas corpus, round people up and put them in concentration camps. And if you're a Christian out there listening, you probably are one of the people who's on that list, because there's an intense hatred of Christianity on the part of the people who are within the ruling class, because they worship a different God. And you really have to go back and you have to read up on Gnosticism to understand that modern-day Masonry and Theosophy and the New Age and the Rosicrucians, and you go up in the web, you can look up their websites, the Lucius Trust, the New Age movement, the Rosicrucians, the Theosophists, and the modern-day Masonry, they're all in the Gnosticism. And what Christians do not understand, because nobody's going to tell them, is that many people believe there is another God who's far more powerful than the God of the Bible. And until you understand that, so much of what's going on doesn't make sense. The fact that they are doing everything they can to destroy our economy, to transfer our manufacturing and our wealth to other countries, to impoverish our people, to involve us in a massive war in the Middle East, all of these things are coming, and I fear that famine will be here before long as well. Certainly, they're developing real shortages of rice right here in America, as there are in so many other countries. I got this today from David Sibley, who actually provides the ready reserve food that we offer. If you'd like to know more about preparing for the difficult times, give us a call and ask for the emergency food catalog. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927 or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And, well, for the next hour, it's going to be Mike Pacetti. And Mike is running for the Board of Supervisors here in the Monterey Bay area. And I realize that this is a local issue. People out across America, well, why do you want to talk about a local issue for a national or international program? But I think that the issues are seen everywhere. We did a program last week dealing with the spraying for the light brown apple moth, which is happening here in the central coast of California. They're planning to spray up in San Francisco. Are they going to spray for a problem that is really non-existent? And you have to ask yourself why they're spending a little, probably $100 billion or more dollars for to spray for a moth that is not harmful. It came from New Zealand. It's not harmful over there. And it's not a problem here, and they're worried about its effect on the agriculture. But they're not spraying the agricultural areas. They're spraying with the place where the people live, and, of course, it's going to be, I believe, harmful to the people. We know that it's been harmful to the birds and the bees and to the aquatic life, and there's all sorts of studies showing the very real harm, especially some people are very, very sensitive to these things. And the issue there is, of course, if they can do it here on the central coast of California and San Francisco, they can spray everybody in this entire country, because there is, in my estimation, a population control agenda, and many, many people have reported illness and all sorts of problems after the spraying. Public health officials says it didn't occur, but they've never talked to any of the people, to my knowledge, that have had the problems. Well, again, here we're talking to Mike Pacetti, running for the Board of Supervisors here in an area which has been under Marxist control, under the control of people who most of them were frank Marxists going back for many, many years, back to the time when Jane Fonda was married to her first husband, who was a radical Marxist, and they took over a number of cities and communities in California. Santa Cruz is the only residual of that takeover. But, it would be nice, of course, if we could get the county government back in the hands of the people rather than the people who have a radical agenda. In fact, Santa Cruz has been used as an experimental site for all sorts of social experiments. The original Medicare was tried out here. The original Sustainable Development Agenda 21 was tried right here in Santa Cruz. It's now, of course, being applied all throughout the world. Agenda 21, the agenda for the 21st century. But try it out in Santa Cruz. Well, Mike, why do you want to run for the Board of Supervisors? Because I know you've talked about it for a long time. Mike actually, of course, repairs aircraft radio. He has a business. And, of course, he'd have to cut back dramatically on his business if he became a member of the Board of Supervisors. Why are you willing to make the sacrifice to do that, Mike?
Because I feel that our county needs to get back to people control rather than bureaucracy and, as you say, extreme leftist.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now, do you have a position at all on Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, or have you even really had an opportunity? Most people don't understand that this is simply a vehicle that is being used to take over control of private property. And certainly it looks to me, Mike, knowing what's going on here in our community, that there's a small group of people who want to control every aspect of our lives.
Well, that's been going on throughout history, and it's our country was founded for people to be free and to have their so-called unalienable rights. And there's been a certain segment of our people that have been trying to take those rights away.
All right, well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Mike Pacetti. And if you're out there, you'd like to give him a call, my number, 464-8295. All right, Mike, of course, the election's going to be when? In June?
Yeah, June 3rd.
All right, fine. And, of course, now how many people are running for the, what is this, the second supervisorial district?
First.
First is the first district, okay. All right, so how many people are actually running for the for that position?
Well, there was six, but there one is withdrawn, so we're down to five now.
All right, fine. And, of course, why is your candidacy different than the other people's candidacy?
Because I want to represent the people, not the unions, not special interest groups.
All right, certainly the unions are a powerful force here, and of course, what unfortunately what they've done is they put so much pressure on the Board of Supervisors that they've voted them all sorts of special benefits, higher salary, but the thing that really, of course, creates the problem are the health benefits after they retire, and of course, the pensions that they've voted for them, and many of the people retire when they're fairly significantly young, and isn't that running us up in tremendous deficits? How does the county budget, do you have any idea what the official county budget is at the present time?
Well, it's astronomical, really, and not too much of that is going to people service.
Do we have any idea how much is actually the budget actually is?
I don't.
All right, fine. But, of course, what is happening to all the money that they're taking in? Because, of course, they have a big county courthouse down there. They've got a lot of county functions. Where is the money going?
Well, one thing is that we have the second largest planning department in the whole state of California. The only other planning department that's larger than ours is the County of Los Angeles.
Well, that's pretty poor commentary, because we're not that large a county, are we?
No, we're one of the smaller counties in the state.
Well, then, so what does the Planning Commission do? I mean, how does that impact on the lives of the people in this area?
Well, they are actually out to control people's housing. And the philosophy of some of the people in power is that the government owns everything, and we just have the use of it at the government's will.
Well, these are sort of Marxist concepts, aren't they? The radical left's idea?
That's right.
And, of course, they can argue back and forth. They say, well, after all, you wouldn't want to have them be able to build a dynamite plant next to a hospital. Don't we need some planning?
Well, yes, we do. Without planning, there's chaos. But, I mean, you know, it's overdone.
All right, fine. Well, now, do you have any position at all on the lumbering? Because this is a big issue. We have beautiful forests around here, many of them privately owned. And hold that just for a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mike Pesenti, and Mike is running for the Board of Supervisors in the first district here in Santa Cruz County, where I live. And, of course, one of the problems is that there are beautiful, beautiful redwood forests around us, and, of course, a lot of these are privately owned by families who have been in the lumbering business for many years. They do not do clear-cut cutting at all. They do selective lumbering. But, of course, when you shut down the woods, as the radicals who control the Board of Supervisors have done for many years, when you shut down lumbering and you shut down people's access, why, of course, the underbrush increases, the likelihood of fire increases. And the best way, of course, to control a forest is to selectively lumber. How do you feel about the restrictions that have been placed on the lumbering here in Santa Cruz?
Well, it's caused lumber prices to go sky high. And I believe that, you know, the forests need to be taken care of. I'm a what you might call a realistic environmentalist. I'm not a radical environmentalist. I believe that the environment has to be taken care of, but we don't have to overdo it for special purposes for radical agendas. And lumbering actually keeps the forest healthy. They take out the dead trees and those trees that are diseased, and then they come back in and they plant new trees. And, you know, lumber is a crop, and it should be treated like a crop.
But, of course, they really don't want that. In fact, what they really want, of course, is for the forest to burn, because that's the way the nature handled it. And, in fact, our good friend Michael Shaw, Freedom Alliance here in Santa Cruz, has actually sat in the audience where officials from Washington, D.C., environmental experts would come in and says, it's not that we're going to let the fire burn, the forests burn. It's not that we're going to let the forest burn. We're going to make them burn. Because they really do want the forest to burn, and that way, of course, then they'll start in all over again. And all that lumber will be lost, and certainly the right of the people who bought and purchased and looked after that lumber for years will be destroyed. And there are people who have a different view, because, of course, when the forests burn, as they do all across our state, because they're not properly taken care of, because barriers are put in the way of people who own the property looking after it, then, of course, the animals there, the deer and the other animals are all burned, and and yet the environmentalists really don't care. Now, most of us are environmentalists. We love the environment, but unfortunately, there are other radical environmentalists who have an entirely different view, and they don't want people to go in and control the fires. They want to let them burn and destroy the forest, and then they'll come back together again, as they have for thousands of years, long before the white man came. In fact, they really feel that one of the worst things is humanity. And if we didn't have so many people, it would be a lot better world. And these are the environmentalists who have a different agenda, who are pushing Agenda 21 and sustainable development. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Mike, our telephone number is 464-8295, or if you're out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Mike, what are the major issues facing our county that you would be able to address if you were on the Board of Supervisors?
Well, right now, it's been on the consent agenda, where if you want to construct a shall we say, a lean-to type building, for a storage place or a shop that you want to have in your backyard or, whatever, as a non-dwelling place. The proposal is that in order to get a permit to do this, you have to sign an agreement that they can come in and inspect that 24 hours a day. And then you are charged for the inspection to make sure that, you haven't adopted that to a dwelling. And as far as I'm concerned, that's against the basic rights of property owners.
In other words, they're not going to give you a permit to put in a small lean-to of any sort unless, of course, you give up your property rights. Is that what you're saying, Mike?
That's right.
And is this, of course, going to be enacted here in Santa Cruz?
Well, it was on the consent agenda here a few weeks ago, and I don't know just exactly what the status is right now. I haven't had a chance to follow it up. But you can bet your bottom dollar that they're going to enact it one way or another.
In other words, what they really want to do is take away people's property rights.
Well, they've pretty much done a lot of that already.
Well, of course, now certainly the county is responsible for the county roads. And we've got terrible county roads certainly all across our county. And they need a lot of work and a lot of repair. But the Board of Supervisors and the city Sydney is saying that we're not going to fix this unless, of course, people and city council as well, unless you, of course, vote for this $30 or $40 million tax increase, sales tax increase, and if you don't, of course, give us the money, we're going to use a lot of that on bike trails and other things so we can get people out of their cars and onto bicycles, because that's the real objective of what's going on. But if you don't get that, we're not going to fix your potholes. Don't you think it's the function of the government to maintain the roads? Isn't that a basic function of government?
It sure is. You see, the primary function of government is public safety. Your police, sheriff, the criminal justice system, your courts, jails, etc. And also included in that is your fire departments to protect your property in case of fire. And you can even include roads into that, because if roads aren't properly maintained, then they become a hazard. People get killed by automobile accidents.
All right. Well, certainly, I think that we need, of course, to get our roads in top-notch order. I think that should be one of the priorities. But certainly the Board of Supervisors has so many other things they've wanted to waste the money on rather than fixing the roads up. I mean, they use this, of course, to help their friends. Of course, there's a tremendous amount of incest within the county itself, as there is within any government, and friends get top-notch jobs. Certainly many of the administrators are making fantastic salaries. Do you have any idea what the salaries are for our county administrator and the staff that they have there?
Well, it's pretty big. I don't know the exact figure right off the top of my head, but I know it's way over $100,000.
I think it's pretty close to $200,000, but then, of course, they get all sorts of retirement benefits, and that's the thing that really worries me, because, of course, the county is, as our county is with all other counties, are looking at decreasing revenues, because they've gotten money from the state in the past, but the state doesn't have the money. They're having to cut back. And, of course, since the tax base is eroding here because of the foreclosures and the falling price of houses, why, they're not going to have the money they've had in the past. So how are they going to be able to have the government function, you know, without the money that they've traditionally had?
Well, I've had 48 years of business experience, and over the years I've learned to pinch pennies beyond the crying, and I intend on taking that same policy and procedures to the Board of Supervisors to find out where there is a lot of wasted money and cut that out and get a budget that's sound.
Well, of course, the thing is that my concern is that they're really going to have to begin cutting jobs down the line, either that, of course, or let the jobs disappear through attrition and just not hire anybody to repair it. But government never has enough money. Traditionally, they always want more and more. They always want new taxes. And, of course, here in the area where we live, the radicals who have controlled our county government for many years have effectively blocked efforts to widen our highways. And, of course, now, of course, we are driving some highway construction after almost 30 years of blocking it. But they're only going to have a wide highway for a few miles, and then it's going to go right back to a little narrow highway. And you have to have adequate highways, you know, for a regular community. And yet, of course, they're saying, well, if you don't want to give us the money that we want with increasing the sales tax, you know, so we can, of course, we're going to buy up the local railway lines, and we're going to have sustainable communities along those railway lines. We're going to put in bike trails all over. If you don't do what we want, they're saying to the people, why, of course, we're not going to fix your roads, and we're not going to fix your highway. And, of course, you're going to be bumper to bumper there. And this is getting increasingly to be a problem. It's almost as if the attitude of the Board of Supervisors is, we're going to control growth by chaos. We're going to create bumper to bumper traffic, and, you know, we're going to force you into either carpools or onto bicycles. And the big thing is, they really want to get people onto bicycles. Why do they want to do that, Mike?
Well, I don't know why, but I know that's what they're trying to do. And, you know, the automobile has been with us for over 100 years. It's become really our main means of transportation for individuals. And we have to look at how we can, make them more economical, naturally, and I think our industries are working on this. But, the automobile is still our main means of transportation, and it's going to be that way for many years.
Well, not if the people on the Board of Supervisors have their way. They're going to create such chaos, we're going to have to get on the bicycle. That's what they really want. And, of course, they go to the bicycle, go to the grocery store and buy groceries, and then go home on the bicycle. Well, I'll tell you what, you can't get an awful lot of groceries onto a bicycle, that's for sure. But these are people who seem to have a different worldview. But they are really in positions of power. They have been for years. And, of course, they want to control and keep the reins of power in their hands. It's all about power. Our telephone number is 464-8295, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have a question for Mike, who's going to be running for the Board of Supervisors, why, give us a call. Well, Mike, certainly we're talking about the problems that we have in our local community. And, of course, I believe very much, as you do, that we need to restrict the power of the local government over the lives of the people. Certainly, as far as the Board of Supervisors is concerned, why, they would deal primarily with the sheriff's office, providing money for the sheriffs. And do you think that the sheriff is getting adequate money at the present time, that the adequate money for the for law enforcement that's under control of the county government?
Well, it costs them a tremendous amount of money to train a new deputy and to get him where he's an effective law enforcement officer. If they don't have proper salaries, they'll go elsewhere with that training and get a higher salary. So we have to have a decent salary for our law enforcement officers. We need to increase the force. I'm also on the Live Oak School Board. I'm elected trustee there. And when the schools call the sheriff's department, when a need is there, you know, like a student has a weapon, that's an offense that has to be reported to the sheriff's department by law. And they may not even respond for a day or two.
Now, are they really that short on personnel at the present time?
Well, I understand that about a call out for some 30 new officers or something like that, from what I hear. And evidently they're not getting the response to these positions.
Well, because one of the big problems we have, Mike, is that it's really so expensive to live in the Monterey Bay area. This is certainly one of the most expensive areas, Santa Cruz, Carmel, Monterey, certainly Silicon Valley and San Francisco, some of the more expensive areas to live in the entire world, and or at least in the entire country. So, you know, you really have to pay deputy sheriffs a pretty good wage so they can afford to live in this region.
That's right. I mean, you know, these are the men and women that are basically putting their lives on the line for our safety, and they should be taken care of so that they can survive in this community.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jack, do you have anything to comment on this subject we're talking now?
Indeed, Dr. Stan. Well, Mike was addressing private land ownership rights.
Right.
Okay, and in the previous hour, Bob Plimpton identified the MCO as the true, you know, ownership document for one's car, truck, whatever, okay? So there's a precise parallel here with the recording of the of one's private land deed with the county. There is no law.
That has nothing to do, of course, with what we're talking about, but thanks for calling, Jack. And, of course, Jack wants to get off on the subject. And everybody's going to have to re-register their property. In fact, you don't have to re-register it at all with the county because, of course, this is, you know, not required by the law. But whether it is or not, of course, we could spend all of our time arguing on that. But if you don't have a deed to your house, you're not going to be able to sell it sometime in the future. And so I think that people who deal with these things, fascinating material, parts of law, but not totally impractical. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mike Pacenti. Our telephone number is 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY out across America. And Mike, of course, would like to see the power taken away from the radical left who have controlled our community for well over 30 years now, probably closer to 35 to 40 years, and return to the people. And I think this is an admirable goal and objective. how do you feel about the redevelopment programs that they have, the redevelopment districts that they have here in the county? Have you looked into that at all, Mike?
Well, I haven't had a chance to really get in depth to it. Generally, redevelopment takes place after a disaster. But we haven't had a disaster here since the 1989 earthquake.
But, of course, many times they will establish these redevelopment areas simply with an idea that by redevelopment they're going to be able to go ahead and spruce up the local community, perhaps put in trees and things of that sort. And so Kell was the part of a redevelopment district. They really did a pretty good job on it. But the question is this the function of the government to do this and force people to pay increased taxes to increase the value or the appearance of a specific areas? And, of course, what about the philosophy of redevelopment? Is this a good thing or not?
Well, like I say, re-establishing buildings and whatnot where it's been wiped out by a disaster of some sort, that's good. But just to come in and take property from people and redevelop it at their whim, I don't think that that's too good.
All right, fine, because we've seen all sorts of problems here in our area. I guess pretty close to 20 years ago. Maybe it wasn't quite that long, but we have a river. It's called the Bahar River. And, of course, it was all overgrown with brush and weeds, and the farmers wanted to go in and clean out the brush and the weeds from the river so that when the winter rains came, why, of course, there would no be impediment to water going down this river, and there wouldn't be a flood. And year after year after year, the environmentalists came in and, of course, blocked the efforts to clean up the river. Well, then, of course, the great rains came, and suddenly, why, the whole of the Pajaro Valley, which is an adjacent valley here in Santa Cruz County, was flooded with, I think, $75 or $80 million worth of damage, all as a direct result of the fact that the people were not allowed to clean up the river. Well, the environmentalists, of course, immediately disappeared. Lawsuits were brought against the local municipality, and they had a hard time meeting it, but eventually they had to pay the people who lost their homes and the people who lost their businesses. I think it was something like $75 million. And justifiably so, because the environmentalists, of course, were there blocking the developments which are really so necessary if we're going to have a civilized society. What about the problems dealing with water here in the Monterey area? Have you looked at all into that at all, Mike?
Well, I have had a lifetime experience at water. My stepfather was Chester Belts that owned the C.L. Belts water system until in the Pleasure Point area here in Live Oak, Santa Cruz, until it was bought in the late 60s by the City of Santa Cruz Water Department. We had wells and produced water for our approximately 1,000 customers. The water was not chlorinated because it was pure. The health department was out here almost every day checking it. We have plenty of water. They're yelling about salt water intrusion, and I don't see that. They're talking, they won't let us put a dam up in, I believe it was Ziani, where they wanted to put a dam here many years ago to create a lake that would be nice to, you know, for fishing and recreation, plus provide water for the city of Santa Cruz. Some college professor come out with a report that there was some sort of a
it was called the Zianti humpback slug, an endangered species, and if they, of course, put in the Zianti dam, why, of course, they would destroy the Zianti humpback slug.
And all, well, it was some sort of a salamander, I understood it.
No, it was a Zianti humpback slug, because, of course, they, in fact, there were people all across the county who had little bumper stickers, save the Zianti humpback slug. Of course, it was no slug. It was all a fraud. They just wanted to block efforts, of course, to build the dam so that we wouldn't have water problems in the future. They don't want solutions. They want problems. That way they can control. And when people begin to understand that this is a standard technique that they use over and over again, they'll understand why the Zayata Dam was never built and why there are water problems in our community today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mike Pacetti, who's running for the Board of Supervisors. And I said that we've talked about the water problems. Well, what should be done as far as the water problems that they claim that we have today? How can we make sure that they tell us there's salt water intrusion? I don't know whether they're telling the truth or not, but they can say anything they want to. They've certainly spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on studies, and then hundreds of thousands of dollars on more studies, and hundreds of thousands of dollars on more studies, but they never do anything to approach and address the problem. What do you think should be done, Mike?
Well, there's one way that they can do is they can put a reverse well. If we're having saltwater intrusion and our aquifer is going down, so that, you know, the surface water that's drain off and goes into the ocean, it can be tunneled into this well that will put the water down in the aquifer.
I'm sorry, but where would the water come from that they're going to be actually doing that? Are you talking taking it out of the river, or how are they going to get it?
Yeah, from rivers and creeks and whatnot. That generally ends up out in the ocean.
I see. So wouldn't that cut down a great deal on the flow of the water in the rivers if you did that?
Well, like I say, that water goes into the ocean, so let's use it.
All right, fine. So you're suggesting that they actually then trap that water somewhere? Wouldn't it be easier in many ways to get some sort of a dam or reservoir to put that into, and then so it would actually sit there, and then the water would seep down into the ground and fill up the aquifer that way?
Well, that could be a possible way of doing it.
But, of course, they specifically have not tried to address the issue. Because if they address the issue, they'd solve it. No, they want the problem. As long as they have the problem, of course, they can talk about controlling growth. They can talk about controlling the amount of water that people, of course, are taking out of their wells. And, of course, this is really what it's all about in many of our communities, why you can't water your lawns or your roses or anything during the daytime. And they have created artificial shortages because, of course, they don't want the solution. They want the problem because it's all about control. How are we going to be able to reverse this problem, Mike, and how are we going to get these problems solved, unless the people are involved? Because most people don't want to run for the water board. It's only those radical environmentalists, of course, who are going to get on the water boards and perpetuate the problems. We're going to be back in just a moment with Mike Pacetti, who is running for Board of Supervisors here in the Santa Cruz region. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mike Pacetti. Mike, certainly, would you like to get out your telephone number, website, or anything if people would like to know more about your candidacy? How would they learn about you?
Well, unfortunately, our website is not developed yet. We're working on that, and hopefully within the week or so we will have a website. I can be reached. My email address is Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. Dot or decimal point, Pacenti, spelled P-I-S-E-N-T-I, at prodigy, P-R-O-D-I-G-Y, dot net. That's one way that I can be reached. My home phone is area code 831-476-3146.
I want to repeat that again, please.
Okay, area code 831-476-3146. 476-3146.
All right, of course, in many respects, running for political office is sort of a thankless job, but you've certainly been on the Board of Supervisors. Pardon me, you've been on the Central Committee of the Republican Party for many years, haven't you, Mike? How many years have you been there?
I would say, about 10, 12 years.
Right.
And I was elected to the Live Oak School Board back in 1975, ran for, you know, served for 4 years as a trustee. That's when my kids were in the school, and when my term was up, I didn't rerun again because my kids were then into high school. A little over 2 years ago, I was asked to run again by certain people, and I put that up as a plea to see if I could win that election. I would have an opportunity to go for Board of Supervisors. Well, I won. So I'm now a trustee of the Live Oak School District by the vote of the people.
All right. So, well, let's go to Bruce, who's calling us from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Bruce. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good, Dr. Stan. You're doing a stupendous job of giving a job interview to this man.
Do you have a question or comment?
Yes. Your candidate should do well to educate him on sustainable development. You've had some very eloquent speakers on sustainable development, and he should understand what that plan is. And furthermore, he can, by the Freedom of Information Act, get the entire budget of his county that he's running for and study what they're spending on all the projects, including all the wages, all the receipts, all the retirement benefits that people are getting. He may have to have a friendly accountant to help explain some of these things to him, but he has potential of going before the wolves here in running for a position like that. He's heading for a very unfriendly environment doing this, and that's just, it's the nature of it. They have literally taken over our government. We all know that.
You're absolutely right, Bruce. And
yes.
I think your points are well made, and actually I know that Mike is planning on meeting with Cindy Michael Shaw of Freedom Advocates, who's
very
a frequent
good.
Guest on our program, and Michael had told me that he wanted to meet with Mike as soon as he got through some health problems he was having, and so we're hoping probably the next week or so, because I think that people have to understand what sustainable development is, what Agenda 21 is, what a sustainable community is, what sustainable construction is, because this is the master plan of everything that's going on in communities not only across America but across the world. And the fact that most people have never heard of these concepts simply is a reflection of the degree of control that exists over what the American people think. And if you were to substitute the word socialism for sustainable development, if you were to substitute the word socialism for sustainable development, this would be a pretty good explanation of what it's about. Anything else you wanted to say, Bruce?
Yes, I've got some good news here.
All right, fine.
We just had the Spokane County Republicans Convention here in Spokane.
Mm-hmm.
And several months ago, there's a call gone out for precinct committee officers. And I called my Republican Central Committee, and they said, no, we don't have a precinct committee officer in your area. So I became one. Well, anyway, out of the 114 delegates for Spokane County, 110 of them went for Ron Paul.
Well, now, what do you have? We actually go to some sort of a state
yes,
convention?
Yes, we'll have the state convention here. And that's 114 of us who have voted for Ron Paul. But basically, it's a repudiation of the standard Republican Party line that has been going on for decades. And, you know, we're standing firm for our principles.
And basically that is get out of the war over in America.
Absolutely,
and
it
cut
was
back
the
on big government.
Topic that we had.
All right, and cut back on big government, do
absolutely.
Away with the IRS, do it's, away with
and,
the Federal Reserve System.
Stop the illegal immigration,
right.
Reverse their policies there. So it was a stunning defeat for the good old boys club.
Well, you know, Bruce, I really think it just shows how effective talk radio can be, because I know you have a number of very good talk radio programs up in that area you're coming from.
Well,
and
not only that, we network well.
Right.
We networked over the Internet and through these meetup organizations. We
right.
did, we sacrificed our time for it. It was worth it.
But God bless you for doing it. It's going to be very interesting. Now, what about the delegates from the state of Washington going to the convention?
All other counties and will have their caucus too, and we expect a tremendous amount of support for Ron Paul. But basically, what we want to do is affect the electoral vote, and you know, we do what we can there. But it was the arrogant assumption that John McCain was going to be the man. Just unbelievable.
But you have to understand, Bruce, and I'm sure you do, that, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations...
Oh, absolutely.
The establishment
is
pushing him. And, of course, John McCain is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and he is actually modifying all of his positions to come into line with theirs.
Oh, I know that. Anyway, and we see the Three Stooges every day, and we just have to ask which one is curly.
Isn't it interesting that they never mentioned that there is one other Republican who's still in the race? His name is Ron Paul, never mentioned by the controlled media because they hate anybody who wants to cut back on government, who wants the people to be free.
Remember that, 110 out of 114. Goodbye, sir, and
God bless.
Good evening. God bless you all.
And thanks very much for your great work up there in Spokane.
That
was Bruce calling from Spokane, and that's encouraging. We do have, of course, our outlets up there, and we're heard on 4 radio stations in that area. If we could be heard on radio stations all across America, and I would just hope and pray that we could get good people, to begin to understand what's going on and educate others. And they've done, obviously, an excellent job in that region of people educating people, educating people. Well, I guess, of course, is Mike Bassetti, who's running for the Board of Supervisors and the first supervisorial district in Santa Cruz County, where I live. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And, well, Mike, certainly as you look at this, you're taking on really a tremendous job. Have you had an opportunity to actually have interviews? The local paper interviews you as a legitimate candidate. What about television stations? Are you getting any coverage there?
Not yet. We've had a couple of forums that I've attended, and I'll be at, real estate people in SoCal. We'll have a forum tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m., and I'll be there at that one.
All right, of course, I bet the people in the real estate business are not very enthusiastic today because houses just are not selling well, and certainly the incidence of foreclosures is increasing. But I certainly, as I look and see the houses, they seem to go on the market, and they stay on the market. I think they're going to have facing very, very real problems in the real estate business because the whole housing industry is simply beginning to shut down as a result of the economic problems facing our nation. And, of course, when you get into government there, Mike, why, of course, you're going to be facing these very real problems that governments all across America, state governments, county governments, city governments are going to be facing, and that is, how do you make the system work, of course, with ever-decreasing amounts of money to work with? So I think it's going to be a real challenge. Certainly we want people in political office who know how to run a business and know how to say no, because everybody always wants more money. Well, would you think that they should decrease the size of the Planning Commission here in Santa Cruz County, since, as you point out, we have the second largest Planning Commission in the entire state?
Well, definitely. Maybe we need to take the Building Department and make it separate from the Planning Department, like it was years ago.
Now, what's the difference between the Building Department and the Planning Department?
Well, the building department actually issues building permits, inspects the buildings to make sure that they are meeting code as they're being built, and the planning department, plans for zoning and things like that.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I think we've got really way, way, way too much planning, and of course, you do not need that many people in a planning commission, but government always wants to increase in size. This is really basically what's wrong with government. You've got to put restrictions on it, and this is as old as time. You go back, and of course, you read what Cicero said, probably 35 years before Christ was born, where he said the budget should be balanced, foreign spending should be limited, the arrogance of the bureaucracy should be tempered, and aid to foreign countries should be limited, or else Rome will go bankrupt. Well, of course, they killed Cicero, and Rome went bankrupt, And, of course, very shortly after that, about 10 years after that, it was the end of the Roman Republic and the establishment of the Roman Empire. Well, of course, Mike, what are some of the other major issues that you're looking at and that you're running for the Board of Supervisors to address?
Well, I think that I'm in favor of rapid transit. I know that there are some of the people that are on our side are not too impressed with that. I know that they're talking about taking over the Southern Pacific Railroad line and making it into a bike trail. I propose that leave the railroad tracks where they're at. Southern Pacific has need to take trains up and bring back from Davenport the concrete and up into the San Lorenzo Valley where they ship out massive sand. But build a rapid transit system over the railroad tracks so that the trains can still go underneath the rapid transit system. A two-tier tracks for rapid transit, one going one way and one going the other, where it could actually tie into BART in the future.
But of course, where's the money going to come from?
Well, there's plenty of federal money to do that.
But the federal government doesn't have any money. The federal government's having to borrow $2.5 billion every day simply to pay its debts.
I mean, well, they take it from special funds. They don't borrow it from the bankers.
Well, but the government doesn't have any funds. They're supposed to have a highway fund. There's no money there. There's just IOUs. There's no money in the Social Security fund. There's no money in the Medicare fund. And, of course, this year in Medicare, why are they going to be putting out more money than they're taking in? They tell us the Medicare fund will be exhausted in another 15 years. There is no fund. There's just IOUs from a government that has to borrow $2.5 billion every day. Every single day. So you want to get money from the federal government to solve our local problems?
Not really, but that's a regional thing. It would, like I say, tie into BART and be throughout the whole San Francisco Bay Area.
Well, of course, this is going to cost multi-billion dollars. They can't even pass a $60 million, budget, $60 billion, sales tax. Where are you going to get the billions of dollars to do what you're suggesting if it doesn't come from the federal government?
Well, then we don't do it.
Okay, and so the thing is that from a purely practical point of view, it would cost a tremendous amount of money to do something of that sort. Well, anyway, of course, we're talking with Michael Pacetti, who is talking about running for the Board of Supervisors here. What are some of the other issues? Certainly, don't you think that maybe we ought to have just regular highways so that we can keep in our cars and have widened highways? These have been blocked. They've been blocked for 30 years. Only recently, within the last 2 years, have we had any work done on Highway 1. So,
well, Caltrain, for, I don't know, 30, 40 years, I guess, has been wanting to make Highway 17 into a six-lane freeway. Likewise, Highway 1 through to Watsonville would be the same, at least a six-lane freeway. But our Board of Supervisors has blocked it, claiming that it's going to cause growth. Well, I got news for you. Our growth over the years has been higher than the national average.
But because that was how they sold their programs to the people. Oh, we're going to keep Santa Cruz a quaint little village. We're only going to allow 2% growth a year. 2% is phenomenal growth. And, of course, we've seen, instead of course, solving the problem, why we have bumper-to-bumper traffic, they're trying to create controlled growth through chaos, and they've done a pretty good job of it. We have no good thoroughfares, and it has been consistent efforts to solve the transit problems have been consistently blocked by the liberal element here in our community. So how will we ever get, of course, the rest of the highway widened going through Santa Cruz County over towards Watsonville? Because once we get past this big, wide highway we've established, we're going to be back to a two-lane road on either side. And certainly we need to widen the highway going over the mountains. That's Highway 17. But the liberals have consistently blocked that, saying if the highway is narrow, people aren't going to come. And yet the people have come. The county has grown. It's become a bedroom community for people commuting across the hill. And of course, during the commute hours, it's almost worth your life to drive that hill.
Yeah, there's just been too many people that have lost their life on those roads due to the fact of crowding.
And of course,
and people get anxious and start whipping in and out of traffic, and the next thing you know, you got an accident.
And of course, the thing is that this has been done intentionally. They have blocked, you know, developing proper roads going across the hills and starts through Highway 1 is the one that parallels the coast here, and it's a, you know, they have blocked the development of that, and they've blocked it for 30 years. Well, our hope, of course, is that someday, way down the line, we're going to get people, responsible people, into electoral positions. But this is not going to happen unless the good people get involved, because you can't run for political office on your own. I know I tried. I learned, much to my chagrin, that if you don't have a good organization behind you, you can have a lot of people agree with you, but if you don't have a good organization, you don't have the money, you're not going to get elected. Basically, money buys elections. And we have, of course, here in Santa Cruz, as in Washington, D.C., some of the finest politicians that money could buy. And believe that money is being put out to preserve this community and keep it from, of course, progressing. These are anti-progressive, not progressives.
One of the people on the left that's running against me is boasting that he has $20,000 to spend. The other one claims that she has $15,000. I don't have anything near that. I would like to get people to donate to this so that we can have a good campaign.
All right, fine. Of course, if you'd be interested in helping Mike again, what's the telephone number?
831-476-3146.
All right. And, of course, one more time, repeat that telephone number.
831-476-3146.
All right, fine. That's Mike Vicente. Of course, also, you work out of the airport over there in Watsonville, don't you?
Yes, I do.
And, of course, is there any way people can contact you over there? Is there a business name?
Yes, the name of the company is Airmartronics, AIRMARTRONICS, Avionics Division.
All right, fine. Of course, so Mike has been doing. How long have you been working over there fixing the radios?
Well, I've had my own business for 46 years.
I see. So you know how to run a business. Do you think you can carry some of those ideas over to running government?
Well, only by the grace of God.
All right. Well, of course, you're going to need a lot of help from God. Of course, if you get into that tangled morass, but, you know, of course, I know people, for instance, in the past who've gotten there. Remember when Pat's last name was, but Marilyn Lillicote got in, and Sydney, they got death threats every night to intimidate them on a regular basis, and everything was done to make their lives so miserable that they wouldn't run again, and neither one of them did. And basically, of course, we have rather ruthless people here. They want to maintain their power in our community, and this was a planned pattern of harassment of people who were on the Board of Supervisors, were trying to do the right thing, and of course they did everything they could to harass them and threaten them until eventually they just ran for one four-year term, and then they were off.
Well, we have another person running in the 4th district. Oh, wait a second. Oh, it's the 5th district, San Lorenzo Valley. That needs to be elected. And that's David Smith.
David Smith, huh?
And him and I can work together and help make the changes.
Well, I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, we sure need changes in Santa Cruz. And so if you'd like to get in touch with Mike, why, of course, it's Mike Pacetti, who's running for the Board of Supervisors. Thanks very much for being with us, Mike. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, our guest this evening has been Mike Pacetti. But this is the time when I certainly want to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the survival of Western civilization, We do hope many of you will join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us. And to really understand what's going on today, you must understand that there is a small clique of people who control our government. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the CD, pardon me, the DVD that goes with that. If you can't afford it, you go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, and it's posted there, the Brotherhood of Darkness. It will introduce you not only to the organizations that are working behind the scenes, but to the spiritual force that energizes those organizations, which nobody wants to talk about. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will want to get our 4-tape set on the secret government, our 4-tape set on secret societies and or the secret government special, which, of course, includes 2 4-tape sets and a couple of DVDs and very important information that will help you begin to grasp the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. To understand what's going on in America, let me suggest the DVDs put out by our good friend Chris Pitto, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And it is very, very professionally done. And what you must understand is that when America was founded as a nation, why there were already people here who belonged to secret societies who intended to take over our government and use the military and financial power of the United States to bring about a world government. There were Christians here, too. The large number of people were Christians. They were the predominant force, but there was also this occult force. So there were the two forces working. Initially, it was the Christians that predominated, but before long, why the occult were in positions of power. Now, the second DVD that you need in this same series is Riddles in Stone, and the secret architecture of our nation's capital, because when the Washington, D.C. was established, there were people working there to use the architecture of the nation's capital to demonstrate the power of the secret societies. Today, the United States has troops in 130 nations, over 700 bases overseas. We have troops stationed in Germany. They've been there for 60 years. We have troops stationed in Japan. They've been there for 60 years. We have troops stationed in Korea. They've been there for well over 50 years. Why are they there? America has an empire. And you have to understand this is not make-believe. It's really very real. So you need to get the DVDs I've talked about, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, and, of course, Riddles in Stone. And then, of course, if I could suggest, a talk given by Chris Pinto, who actually produced the 2 DVDs before, but this is a talk he gave here and at the Radio Liberty seminar 2 years ago. It's called The Atlantis Connection. What is the Atlantis Connection? Why, it's very, very simply that the occultists had always felt that America would become the new Atlantis. And just as the old Atlantis dominated the world back before the Great Flood came, so the new Atlantis would lead the world into the Promised Land, the New World Order, the New World Religion, the destruction of Christianity. That's what it's all about, the Atlantis Connection. An excellent DVD, and then, of course, Constance Cumby's DVD, The Emergence, and she's talking about the emergence of the coming world leader, and then a 4-tape set with her, Constance Cumby. These are important things to have. You can certainly see these up on our website, but we hope many of you will want to get the DVDs and share them with others. Once you have actually gotten them from us, while you have our permission to copy them, and as long as you don't make a profit on it to get these thoughts, these DVDs into other hands, because we're selling ideas. We're trying to get people to understand what's really going on in the world, and the DVDs are an excellent way to do it. Of course, you want to get my talk on the forbidden secret, and you want to get the syllabus that goes with that. My talk on Iraq, the Untold Story, why we're really there, the syllabus that goes with that. You want to get our new talk on the planned police state and the syllabus. Our number 1-800-544-8927.